Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Any idiot can face a crisis, said Anton Chekhov. It's this day-to-day living that wears you out. 100 years after the great Russian playwright breathed his last over talk of champagne, Chekhov speaks with almost painful relevance to modern ears. The grandson of Russian slaves, the author of Uncle Vanya and The Cherry Orchard and Three Sisters, was a physician who launched his literary career in comedy, then took his doctor's scalpel to the illusions and pettiness and self-absorption of human nature. Medicine is my lawful wife and literature is my mistress, said Chekhov. When I get tired of one, I spend the night with the other. Up next, On Point, a new translation of our endless contemporary, Anton Chekhov. Joining me now in the studio is Lawrence Senelec, professor of drama at Tufts University and a Chekhov scholar. He's just come out with a monumental new work of translation, Anton Chekhov, The Complete Plays. Lawrence Senelec, thank you so much for being with us.
Delighted to be here.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine and an avid Chekhov fan. Strasvutia, Jack. Good to have you with us.
Hello, Tom, and hello, Lawrence.
So here we are. Chekhov, even now, all over, eternally our contemporary, you say, Lawrence Senelec. How so?
Well, you mentioned that he was a 19th century playwright. But he's more the first playwright of the 20th century than the last of the 19th.
In his outlook, in his sort of existential grappling.
Exactly, and particularly in the forms which he used to portray this. One of the misunderstandings about Chekhov, it's always seemed to me, is that he's strictly a realistic or a naturalistic writer. But in fact, he's a kind of closet symbolist. And many of the seemingly everyday characters, happenings, settings of his plays conceal much more universal concerns. And that's why the plays continue to resonate. They're not just about a particular period in Russian life. They're about humanity in general.
Look past the samovar. It's right next to us. And as he cranks realism up to that symbolic level that you describe, what's the vantage on human nature that he's taking? What's he exposing that was true then and true now?
Well, as you mentioned in your introduction, he's very interested in the way that people deal with their own lives, whether they are actually looking at what's in front of them. His plays deal a lot with wish fulfillment. One of his favorite phrases, or one of his characters' favorite phrases, is, if only. Mm. They live in a kind of conditional tense. Oh, if only I were married. Oh, if only this had happened. If only that particular job had come through. And instead of actually getting on and living their lives, they're constantly avoiding living. And as a result, they're unhappy. But their unhappiness is not tragic because it's very much of their own making. And Chekhov has a rather wry opinion of their unhappiness.
They're chatting and chatting and chatting and exploring what it is to be human, but with a wry observer, a physician, a kind of scientist, almost scientific observer looking on with a dispassionate sort of view of what humans are up to.
Yes, I would call it almost a clinical view because, as with a physician, he's not unsympathetic. He definitely would like his patients to get better. But at the same time, he's not taking sides against any of them for what they're doing or with them for what they're doing. He's examining the symptoms.
And he's got them right under his hands. Jack Beattie, you're our Chekhovian. How does Chekhov hit you after all these years, through your years, Jack?
Oh, well, I've always just been tremendously moved by these plays. And yet I recognize I'm not moved sentimentally. I'm not moved facilely. I'm not moved by the manipulation of emotion. No, it's the thing itself. And so it's a strange kind of emotional connection. We're not used to it from, you know, the movies hit us over the head with things. These plays don't do that. They they move really by identification. And what you're identifying with are dilemmas just that are so achingly familiar. And you're feeling pity in some ways for yourself and for the human dilemma. Here, let me just read one little bit here. I was looking up a plot summary of The Seagull.
Yeah.
And someone describes the first act this way. Medivenko loves Masha. Masha loves Trepilov. Trepilov loves Nina. Nina loves Trigorin. Arkadina loves Trigorin. Polina loves Dorn. There it is. People not loving the ones they should and loving the ones that they shouldn't. That's just so, you know, that's just so human and so lifelike. And so our connection with it is a very, I think, intimate emotional one and not the usual dramaturgical connection.
But it's all our illusions. It's all our obsessions. It's our pettiness. It's our endless Rubik's Cube relationships. Lawrence Senelik, we want to keep Anton Chekhov in our ear during this hour. You've got a reading from Uncle Vanya. We had a little bit of it there at the top from Uncle Vanya on 42nd Street. I wish you'd set up what you've got there and share it with us, if you would.
This is a bit of a scene from the second act of Uncle Vanya. It's late at night. Sonia, who is the young farm girl, is in love with Dr. Ostrov, the alcoholic, disillusioned country doctor.
Who we heard earlier in the open saying,
right.
What will they think of us 100 years from now?
Exactly. And she wants to feel out whether he has any interest in her. He's been drinking heavily, and she tells him not to drink and asks him if he wants something to eat. So they're both standing at a sideboard and eating some cheese. Ostrov. I didn't eat a thing today, just drank. Your father has an oppressive nature. Gets a bottle from the sideboard. May I? Drinks a shot. There's nobody around, so a man can speak frankly. You know, I have the feeling I wouldn't last a month in your house. I'd suffocate in this atmosphere. Your father, all wrapped up in his gout and his books, Uncle Vanya with his biliousness, your grandmother, lastly, your stepmother, Sonia. What about my stepmother? Ostrov. Everything about a human being ought to be beautiful. Face, dress, soul, ideas. She's the fairest in the land, no argument there, but all she does is eat, sleep, go for walks, enchant us all with her beauty, and that's it. She has no responsibilities. Others work for her. Am I right? And a life of idleness cannot be pure. Pause. Anyway, maybe I'm being too hard on her. I'm dissatisfied with life, same as your Uncle Vanya, and we're both turning into grouches. Sonia. So you're dissatisfied with life? Ostrov. Life in the abstract I love, but our life, rural, Russian, humdrum, I cannot stand, and I despise it with every fiber of my being. And as to my own private life, honest to God, there's nothing good about it, absolutely nothing good about it. You know how when you walk through a forest on a dark night, if all the time in the distance there's a glimmer of light, you don't mind the fatigue or the dark or the prickly branches hitting you in the face? I work, as you know, harder than anyone else in this district. Fate never stops hitting me in the face. At times I suffer unbearably. But in the distance there's no light glimmering for me. I've stopped expecting anything for myself. I don't love people. For a long time now, I've loved no one. Sonia. No one? Ostrov. No one. Oh, I do feel a certain affection for your dear old nanny, for old time's sake.
Wonderful. Lawrence Senelik there, reading from his own translation of Anton Chekhov, from his new Anton Chekhov, The Complete Plays, The Rural, The Russian, The Humdrum. Jack Beattie, Lawrence Senelik points out there's a kind of choice to be made about how one interprets Chekhov, which path you go down.
Yeah, and you know, my path was the one lighted by Constance Garnett in translations done 100 years ago. And my gosh, it's hard to get the comedy even in the taking it in the broadest sense as a sort of wry look at things. It's hard to get that out of some of that 19th century English into which it's been Chekhov's delicate sensibilities and kind of straitjacketed. And I'm curious, Professor, how have you done with the comedy? Is that one of the things you've gone right at in your translation?
Absolutely. Chekhov is full of jokes, and a lot of translators have missed the jokes because they don't know the literary allusion, or they don't catch the fact that Chekhov has used this phrase in letters or in stories in a certain way in the past. For instance, in the piece that I just read, you'll notice that Ostrov, in my translation, says, "She's the fairest in the land." No argument there. Mm. Now, most translators simply translated that as, "She's beautiful," because in the Russian it's «прекрасна», «она прекрасна». But in fact, the whole thing is an embedded quotation. «Она прекрасна спора нет» is the opening of Pushkin's poem, his version of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
I wondered in there, I thought that's too silly, but that's it.
Yeah, that's it. So that any Russian in Chekhov's original audience would hear «Она прекрасна спора нет» and immediately know he's quoting «She's the fairest
mirror,
in the
mirror, mirror on the wall».
Exactly.
Oh, boy, and off we go.
So you have to pick up on that and mm-hmm. get it in there so that it makes the same allusion that's in the Russian. Mm.
I'd like to turn to The Seagull. I think you've got a reading from this play as well. You describe this as kind of a transitional play in Chekhov's dramatic works. What's the transition he's making here, and what will you read for us, Lawrence?
Well, this is a transition from the kind of play that was expected on the stage to the kind of play that he was writing himself. So it's got long monologues, it's got dramatic confrontations, it's got strong curtain lines.
So a little of the old
which are
and
left
a little of the new. Old.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But this is the a scene, again, between a middle-aged man and a country girl, where Nina is infatuated with the writer Trigorin, who's a popular writer, mm-hmm. Well-published. And she says to him, "Your life is so beautiful." And he responds, "What's so especially good about it?" Looks at his watch. "I ought to get some writing in now. Forgive me, I've got no time." Laughs. "You've stepped on my pet corn, as the saying goes, and I'm starting to get upset and a little bit angry. All right, let me make a statement. Let's talk about my beautiful, brilliant life. Well, now, where shall we begin?" After thinking a bit. "Some people are obsessive compulsives, a person who thinks all the time, for instance, about the moon. Well, I have my own particular moon. All the time, I'm obsessed with one compulsive thought. I have to write. I have to write, I have to. I've barely finished one story when already for some reason I have to write another, then a third, after the third, a fourth. I write nonstop like an express train, and I can't help it." "What's so beautiful and brilliant about that, I ask you?" "Oh, what an uncivilized way of life. I'm here talking to you. I'm getting excited. But meanwhile, I never forget there's a story of mine waiting to be finished. I see that somewhere in a story, a cloud drifted. I see that cloud over there that looks like a grand piano. I think, have to refer to that somewhere in a story. A cloud drifted by that looked like a grand piano. I catch a whiff of heliotrope. I instantly reel it in on my mustache. Cloying smell, widow's color, refer to it in describing a summer's evening. I'm angling in myself and you for every phrase, every word. And I rush to lock up all those words and phrases in my literary icebox. Sometime or other, they'll come in handy. When I finish work, I run to the theater, I'll go fishing, should be able to relax there, forget myself. Oh, no. A heavy cannonball has started rolling around in my head. A new subject. And I'm drawn back to my desk. Hurry, hurry, write, write. And so it goes forever and ever and ever, and I know no peace, and I feel that I'm devouring my own life, that to give away honey to somebody out there in space, I'm robbing my finest flowers of their pollen, tearing up those flowers, and trampling on their roots. Wouldn't you say I'm crazy? Surely my friends and relatives don't behave as if I were sane. What are you puttering with now? What will you give us next? The same old, and I start thinking this friendly attention, praise, admiration. It's all a plot. They're humoring me like an invalid. And sometimes I'm afraid that they're just on the verge of creeping up behind me, grabbing me, and clapping me into a straitjacket. Like the madman in Gogol's story.
Oh, Lawrence Senelec, a reading from The Seagull. That, how wonderful. I mean, we hear that hyper-interior awareness. You could put it in Woody Allen's mouth. You could put it in Giamatti's mouth. And also that absurdist deconstruction beginning here, Jack.
Yeah, and, you know, his diary, he refers there to his diary and noting things down. Chekhov, in his own diaries, put in marvelous bits. You know, there's one, the dog walked in the street and was ashamed of its crooked legs. Or he picked his teeth and put the toothpick back into the glass. He was always looking for those just, well, dissonant or, put it another way, purposeless moments that really, as James Wood, the critic, said, is one of his merits in fiction, one of his pioneering devices, the free consciousness.
Yeah.
Characters think things that aren't related to the plot.
The cloud is a grand piano, and I reel it in on my mustache, and whoa, we're off to the races.
Yeah, right. I mean, there it is.
Lawrence Senelec, we've just got half a minute left. Leave us a parting thought on this man's message to us now, this playwright, Anton Chekhov.
One of the things that I find most appealing about Chekhov is the kinship he has with Beckett, that his characters seem to be involved so much in the trivia of life, like all of us, getting up in the morning, making our coffee, leading our going to work, having love affairs, all the rest of it, to prevent us from actually confronting existence. And the pauses and the silences in his plays are the places where you hear existence out there. And it's a little scary.
Acquaintance, next a mistress, and only then a friend. Always something new in the silence and beyond from Anton Chekhov. Lawrence Senelec's new translation is Anton Chekhov, The Complete Plays. It's been wonderful having you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a delight.
Jack Beattie, great to have you. See you around the samovar.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.